This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. In for Amy J this morning is Sean from Elmwood Park. Sean, pleasure.
It's true. I believe Amy is having, I heard she had a slight rash on the back of her hand from the vaccine. So I think she should take the day off and at least go have it looked at. What do you think?
I think we need to get on to so much that we have to discuss this morning, starting with the news that went viral yesterday afternoon. I got more comments on this, saw more comments about this. Hasbro, again, this is the Associated Press reporting. Hasbro is creating confusion. Hasbro created confusion Thursday when it announced it would drop the Mr. from Mr. Potato Head so that all could feel welcome in the Potato Head world, quote unquote. It also said it would sell a new place at this fall without the Mr. and Mrs. designations that will let kids create their own type of potato families, including, of course, two moms or two dads. Why so much reaction to the shakeup in the potato world when this is lagging what's happened in the real world? I don't understand the fear. We've been playing and sanctioning human beings playing Mr. Potato Head with themselves, with treating themselves like soulless toys for the better part of the last decade, the celebration only increasing in volume. So I don't understand why people are all of a sudden, is it the asleep are suddenly awake to the reality of trans politics and as part of the identitarian political onslaught? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
I think Mr. Potato Head is clearly a sexist pig. You could see it by the look on his face. So to take the Mr. off of it, now he just looks like every government official. I think it's perfect. He's going to blend right in.
The mustache you're talking about.
Absolutely.
So this, of course, dovetails with testimony yesterday, the confirmation hearing for Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services from Dr. Rachel Levine, or for Dr. Rachel Levine, the former head of the state public health department in Pennsylvania. And the exchange between Rand Paul and Dr. Levine was the most pronounced. And I have to tell you, Rand Paul continues to be one of the few repositories of courage in the entire Congress of the United States. And here he was again tackling a sensitive subject and one that most people will steer clear of because it's just too politically charged. And God forbid we have an adult conversation that could offend anybody who is ignorant and thus unable to have an adult conversation about something as serious as this, particularly when it comes to gender identity, surgery. Particularly when it comes to minors. Rand Paul not afraid to have that discussion with somebody who has been nominated to be the Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services, nor should he have been.
Most genital mutilation is not typically performed by force, but as WHO notes, that by social convention, social norm, the social pressure to conform, to do what others do and have been doing, as well as the need to be accepted socially and the fear of being rejected by the community, American culture is now normalizing the idea that minors can be given hormones to prevent their biological development of their secondary sexual characteristics. Dr. Levine, you have supported both allowing minors to be given hormone blockers to prevent them from going through puberty, as well as surgical destruction of a minor's genitalia. Like surgical mutilation, hormonal interruption of puberty can permanently alter and prevent secondary sexual characteristics. The American College of Pediatricians reports that 80 to 95% of prepubertal children with gender dysphoria will experience resolution by late adolescence if not exposed to medical intervention and social affirmation. Dr. Levine, do you believe that minors are capable of making such a life-changing decision as changing one's sex?
Well, Senator, thank you for your interest in this question. Transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field with robust research and standards of care that have been developed. And if I am fortunate enough to be confirmed as the Assistant Secretary of Health, I will look forward to working with you and your office and coming to your office and discussing the particulars of the standards of care for transgender medicine.
The specific question.
You know, from now on, Dr. Levine will be referred to as Kurt with a wig. I have a friend named Kurt, and that's what he looks like. I mean, are we supposed to pretend that's a woman? Even with that phony voice? Dr. Levine slash Kurt with a wig is exactly why when my wife was pregnant, I prayed for girls. Can you imagine this poor son of a gun's father?
Well, here's the thing. Dr. Levine is a board-certified pediatrician.
Big deal.
And which is why this is an important question that he asks, because Dr. Levine, this is your area of expertise, children's medicine. So will you commit to your position on things like puberty blockers? You heard the wave-off answer. I'm not going to answer the question, but I'll be happy to discuss it with you in private at some point. You heard Rand Paul properly state Dr. Levine's position. By the way, this is an individual who's 63 years old, and he transitioned about a decade ago. Rand Paul tried one more time to get Dr. Levine to answer that really salient question as a medical professional.
The question was about minors. Let's be a little more specific since you evaded the question. Do you support the government intervening to override the parent's consent to give a child puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and or amputation surgery of breasts and genitalia? You have said that you're willing to accelerate the protocols for street kids. I'm alarmed that poor kids with no parents who are homeless and distraught, you would just go through this and allow that to happen to a minor. I would hope that you would have compassion for Kira Bell, who's a 23-year-old girl who was confused with her identity. At 14, she read on the internet about something about transsexuals. She thought, well, maybe that's what I am. She ended up getting these puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones. She had her breasts amputated. But here's what ultimately she says now. And this is a very insightful decision from someone who made a mistake but was led to believe this was a good thing by the medical community. I made a brash decision as a teenager, as a lot of teenagers do, trying to find confidence and happiness, except now the rest of my life will be negatively affected, she said, adding that the medicalized gender transitioning was a very temporary, superficial fix for a very complex identity issue. What I'm alarmed at is that you're not willing to say absolutely minors shouldn't be making decisions to amputate their breast or to amputate their genitalia. For most of our history, we believe that minors don't have full rights and the parents need to be involved. So I'm alarmed that you won't say with certainty that minors should not have the ability to make the decision to take hormones that will affect them for the rest of their life. Will you make a more firm decision on whether or not minors should be involved in these decisions?
Senator, transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field, and if confirmed to the position of Assistant Secretary of Health, I would certainly be pleased to come to your office and talk with you and your staff about the standards of care.
Shut up, pal. Kurt with a wig. I can't believe this is our reality. It is bizarro world. You're a dude. You don't look like a woman, and stay away from our kids. Freak.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, look, here's the bottom line. You're a nominee for Assistant Secretary of HHS, as I said before. No, I'm sorry. I know what you're doing, Dr. Levine, obviously, because you're ham-handed at it. You're not good at it. You may be good at the practice of medicine to some extent, but not when it comes to this arena. You're going to answer the question, or I'm going to use my time to tell my colleagues why this is somebody who should not be confirmed for HHS. And it has nothing to do with her identity, his identity. It has everything to do with you're going to answer a question about a position which we know you have, and you're going to be honest, because if you can't be honest about your position, what does that say about your understanding of this issue? What does it say about your forthrightness? What does that say about your qualification, your competency, your propriety to be a senior level official in the federal government. It speaks badly for you across all of those ranges. By the way, on this issue, there have been courts that have weighed in, including the British High Court, just this past December, in a case, December 12th, Bell versus Tavistock. The High Court in England held that puberty blockers, cross-sex hormone use, and gender dysphoric minors was experimental and should not, in most cases, be given to children under 16 without court order, adding that such petitioning was also advisable for 16 to 17-year-olds. I mean, this is a serious business with respect to children's health, and it's also another example where the men and women who pretend they are persons of science and data are not when it comes to identitarian politics and ideology. We know that those who undergo sex change interventions, and this is all ages, we're not just talking about minors here, do not experience lasting benefits with regard to mental health. In fact, they're 19 times more likely to commit suicide than their respective age and other demographic cohorts. Besides sterilization, puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones have been shown to damage cardiovascular health, bone density, and reproductive functions. So, I mean, these are bad health outcomes. And by the way, if you want to read actual real-world stories like the one Rand Paul shared, you can go to Walt Heyer's site, somebody who made a mistake in getting gender reassignment surgery and then got reassigned back. And shares these real-world stories of people. It's sexchangeregret.com. I mean, it's the, you know, this is not just some ridicule, or this is not othering. This is taking a serious topic about people's health, and particularly the health of minor children, who we otherwise say do not have the legal standing to consent to medical procedures, except when it's the case of an abortion, from the left's perspective, or gender reassignment surgery, gender mutilation, as Rand Paul was describing. It is lunacy, but it's not funny to me. It's not something to ridicule Dr. Levine's appearance. It's to ridicule the substance of Dr. Levine's position. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Let's go to Mary Kay in Western Springs.
Hi, good morning, you guys. What an 18-year-old, can't. When I was 18, I wasn't able to make these types of decisions for myself. I had to rely on my parents to help me with whatever, you know, whatever 18-year-olds are dealing with. We were confused. I was confused. I didn't know what the hell was going on with me when I was 18 across the board, you know. But to see something happen to these children permanently. I mean, this is permanent. You take off your, you know, your genitals, you mutilate your genitals. It's permanent. They will deal with it for the rest of their lives, obviously. And, you know, you were just talking about somebody who wanted to, reverse this, you know. I mean, this happens in healthcare all the time. People have vasectomies. They want them reversed. Life changes. And to do this to a child, I mean, for people to have the ability to do this when they're that young is wrong, absolutely wrong. I agree completely with you, Dan. A child has no ability to make these permanent decisions.
Thanks, Mary Kay.
First of all, my cousin Johnny, who married her, relied on her inability to make choices, good decisions, and her confusion. So we all did that. But the thing that is astonishing to me is you said earlier you'd like honesty. I mean, I know, listen, nobody's smarter in radio. You're the professor. I get it. That is a guy in pantyhose and a pin skirt. He's not going to be honest with you. Let's just go from step one.
Philip on the Northwest Side.
Good morning, Dan and Sean. Dan, I want you to understand that I have utmost respect for you. I really do. I admire your intellect. But I want to convey without insult that I think you're allowing yourself to be damage control, and I don't want to be insulting at all, but I really believe this because, you know, there is a point in every man's life that has children, and you only know this when you have children, where you have lines that are drawn, and we can talk about things like a political football all day and through multiple administrations, but once they cement things into law and bring them into schools, this is where men take up arms and they do things about them. And the reason they do is because the children have no protection against these Satanists. And we don't talk about how many people are committing suicide and all these other things, and kids that are raped or kids that are gay and they've never had sex with the opposite sex because of all this endless brainwashing and confusion. And I plead with you, because I truly respect you and your show and your staff. Please convey this in a more directive way of how to be proactive to get rid of these people out of these offices, instead of how their opinions and their doctors, and we should look at it when play football, because you know what? It's my opinion that they shouldn't even be in trial. They should be put up on treason charges and put to death.
Okay. All right. Well, we disagree with that, Philip. Thanks for the call.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Sean from Elmwood Park in for Amy J. And we were talking before Mike Scott's newscast about Mr. Potato Head, as well as about public officials in positions of authority who support treating children like Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head. Talking about trans ideology and identitarian politics. And not just in the form of the nomination of Dr. Rachel Levine to, or Dr. Rachel Levine, I believe is the pronunciation, to HHS, but also the Equality Act, which passed the House. We talked about this last year. And try to provide a continuum, the implications, just as, done over the last 10 or 15 years with respect to the implications of being indifferent to the redefinition of marriage. Support civil unions. If you don't support gay marriage, don't get gay married. Ha ha. And then supposed to be indifferent to boys in the girls' locker room, to men in the women's bathroom. I don't want to create a scene. I don't want to make anybody feel bad. I mean, other than the girls, I guess, or the women. Or people of faith who understand the implication of biological sex. And so now we're on the cusp of the Equality Act. We'll see what kind of opposition Republicans want to mount in the Senate. There were only three Republicans, and it's a disgrace that three Republicans voted for the Equality Act, but three did, two from New York, one from Pennsylvania. The Equality Act, just so you understand it, would replace in the 1964 Civil Rights Act, biological sex with the phrase sexual orientation and gender identity as the as illegal bases to make decisions with respect to employment, housing, and the like. But what it would really do is create thought crimes. And it would forever change the landscape of religious liberty were the Supreme Court to uphold it if it passes and if it's challenged. Because you're not going to allow to believe in traditional marriage, for example. You're not going to be allowed to believe that men and women are different, that there's something innate about your biological sex. And you're certainly not going to be able to express that in your faith. Oh, by the way, that would include at Catholic schools. Do I have your attention now? It would include at public schools. How about now? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Chris Bedford over at The Federalist has a good piece on the topic. If the bill passes the Senate, our church parishes will become soft targets. While weak-kneed men like David French confidently celebrated the migration of drag queens from rowdy CD city bars to children's library story hours as quote-unquote blessings of liberty, it will be curious to see what he thinks when parish halls are subjected to those same blessings. Unhappy with and this also goes to other, are you an adoptive family or do you know one? Did you use a Catholic adoption agency? unhappy with the restrictions and eligibility that Catholic and other religious adoption agencies put on families looking to take children into their homes. The ACT, Equality Act, seeks to nationalize Massachusetts, New York, and California's outright bans on religious adoption agencies' right to operate according to conscience. Catholic school and other form of religious education will be compelled by the Act to teach a concept of marriage antithetical to their faith, as well as the popular but absurd claim that boys can be girls and girls can be boys. Religious education alternatives are already suffering under COVID rules, and despite the fact that many serve the poor and disproportionately minorities, that won't matter. The same rules will apply to women's sports, as well as their bathrooms and locker rooms. Nationalizing these experiments you've seen, not just on the coast, but in places like Palatine 214, the school district, including with respect to athletics, of women trying to compete against men. And by the way, this has been going on for a long time. That's why I found it so sadly comical that people were up in arms about the Mr. Potato Head announcement by Hasbro. I mean, 10 years ago, you had a 6'8", 230-pound male basketball player transition and play collegiate basketball for a small college called Mission College. Does anybody remember that? Do you remember Gabriel Ludwig, a.k.a. Robert Ludwig? Oh, yeah. He was 50 years old, too, around there at the time. Nice that he retained some collegiate eligibility. Turned out to be all conference when he played on the women's basketball team. Do I have your attention now, or is this a situation where we're just going to continue to cede ground? We're going to start from the premises of the left. We're going to engage in the same sentimental barbarism that services their basis for public policy making. And we're just going to pretend we don't know what's happening, as it's happening in real time. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
You know, aside from the fact that I haven't been able to pick out a man or a woman at a CTU meeting for 10 years, I don't know how you're surprised at this. I used to call this, when it first started, the rise of the Fourth Reich, the thought crimes. The forced acceptance, the balkanization of opinion and thought. This is the Fourth Reich, and you will capitulate, period. I have to pretend that freakazoid is whatever he says he is. Sorry, that's how you combat it. And these people making your kids stay at home are doing you the biggest favor in the world, because if they were in school, they'd be inundated with this, without your ability to say, don't listen to these morons, like I've been telling my kids for 20 years.
It's not just the Equality Act at the federal level. Did you see this? California state legislation, of course, California. Sounds like something that probably will come to Illinois sooner rather than later. California legislation would levy $1,000 fines to retailers that have separate girls and boys toy sections. And you think that this is just a live and let live philosophy that the left has, right? This is enlightened. And, to the point a caller made before the news, and to the point we've made on this show throughout the pandemic, where are the dads in this discussion? Where are the dads? Where are the men in this country? I'm talking about the men with chests, not the men without chests. I know where the men without chests are. They're everywhere. Where are the men with chests? Thank you, C.S. Lewis.
This is the Lululemon's fault. I told you, when men started wearing Lululemons, it was over with.
Joe in Hoffman Estates.
Hey, a point that you guys didn't bring up in the Rand Paul talking to the guy that was sitting there. Dr. Paul said that it wasn't long ago when a kid could not go into a hospital and get stitches without having parent consent. And now they're going to have them mutilated without apparent consent. This world is so sick. And I'm one of the men, Dan, that you're talking about. But you tell me what the hell I'm supposed to do. I'm pissed off as it is. Where do I go? What do I do? I look at my kids, and I don't know what the hell's in store for them. So you come up with the plan. I can't figure out what the hell to do anymore. I'm sick of it. I hate this.
Thanks for the call, Joe. I understand. I understand the frustration. I'm not trying to moralize on it. I'm trying to motivate on it. You know, you can be courageous and measured at the same time. You can tackle these topics intelligently the way Rand Paul did yesterday. You can reason with people at a school board meeting, superintendent, school board members, teachers. You can stand up for yourself and say the things on that you say on this radio program to them. And within your circles of influence, whether it's at a cocktail party or a formal government proceeding. I mean, what can any individual do except be an opinion leader, be a thought leader? Everybody can do that. That's what I'm saying. I'm not expecting any one individual to single-handedly turn the tide. Nobody can do that. Not the most powerful person in conservative media, and that's certainly not me.
I could do it.
And Sean, it's not Sean from Elmwood Park either. That's for damn sure. He doesn't. He fails the predicate test of thoughtfully and intelligently. It's the same conversation we have on so many of these topics. I know you feel like it's too big to tackle. It's not too big to tackle. Just do your part where you live, where you have influence. That's all.
And I'll tell you this. I know you think I'm kidding, but the acceptance of this lunacy is the problem. I refuse to accept Dr. Levine is a woman. It is a freak show. And by the way, what is this reversing a sex change? Once the Schweinsteiger is removed, you can't put that thing back on. You got big problems. Then you got to be Lori Lightfoot, dressed like a man without being able to use the fly.
All right, well, when you pass the boards, then we'll take your opinion on what can and can't be done surgically. But no, I actually agree with you. And this is one of the conflations that started occurring over the last two decades and now has reached fever pitch. Tolerance and acceptance are not synonyms. Tolerance, acceptance, and celebration are not synonyms. I am tolerant of people who disagree with me, who choose gender reassignment surgery. That's fine. I'm not going to accept it. I'm not going to accept it as public policy. I'm not going to accept the implications of it as public policy, as we're describing. And I'm certainly not going to be forced to celebrate it. That's the distillation that needs to be provided to these ghastly champagne socialists in the leafy suburbs and the corporate boardrooms and in charge of all of our cultural and educational institutions. It's not that challenging, I don't think. I don't think. Chris in Evanston.
Good morning, guys. Thank you, as always. I just want to say that the goal here is to declare Christianity a hate crime.
Yes, absolutely.
That is where this is headed, that everything you believed as a Christian about the nuclear family, it's blah, 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 that's all wrong. And in fact, folks who maintain those beliefs are going to end up facing charges. And that the victims along the way to that state, to that nirvana state, are the little kids. And I consider the testimony that was given yesterday to show that Dr. Levine, in his single-minded pursuit of his ideological goal, is about equivalent to the gymnastics coach who took his own life for abusing children. The acts are the same. Child abuse under Dr. Levine's program is perfectly justified to reach their level of societal domination. It's an acceptable cost. And I agree with you. We got to stand up against this wherever and however we possibly can, because it's going to absolutely ruin the social fabric of our country.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
You know, the Third Reich went after just one religion. The Fourth Reich goes after all of it.
Peggy in Chicago.
Oh. Hi. I feel like, you know, putting Alka-Seltzer in my coffee. You know, this is not cute. And I'm thinking, how did we get here? The thing that I wanted to say is that I feel sick. No, I wanted to say that somebody has to ring the bell. But did you hear about Ohio? Ohio changed back. Their people, because person to person, okay, and their governor was open to it, but they're not locked down anymore.
Thanks for the call, Peggy. Greg in LaGrange.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have this discussion all the time at church, and we talk about this all the time, and I'm the one before Mass that's kind of like on the pulpit saying the same thing. Do you think that by acquiescing and not standing up for what we believe, that somehow we're going to be immune? That we've painted lamb's blood on our door jams and the mob is going to pass by us? We're not. Listen, I'm not into destroying people on what they believe or what they not believe. I'm all about rational discussion, okay? But this is the Rubicon. It doesn't get any better. It doesn't go back. And I think we need to have these rational discussions. But I do this. I look to answers in my church at one parish at a time, and I'm not afraid to call out the Archdiocese of Chicago because I think they've been silent. Because they're not fighting for us. They're not fighting for our rights as Christians.
Completely agree.
People are afraid. The one thing I wanted to ask you about, Dan, is, and one thing that stuck with me last September when I heard the interview you had with David Azarad that I haven't heard on in a while, is when he referenced that NRO piece and he said, the left is basically one and they're Rod Dreher. They're running the countryside, the Benedict option. They're not going to allow any of that. It's one way or no way, and we need to have rational discussions now while we have a chance to try and change minds. Otherwise, you're going to back people into a corner, and that's not going to be good. So,
thanks for the call, Greg. Appreciate it. Jim in Crown Point.
Getting back to the gender politics, my son wanted a tattoo when he was 14. We went through hell over it. I refused. I told him when you're out of this house, you can get what you want. Now he's married with children, and every so often he thanks me for not allowing the tattoo. Another thing, this woman talking about being what you want to be, I forget her name. She wanted to be a black lady. She was canceled out of existence. You don't even hear from her anymore.
Sideshow Bob.
Rachel Dolezal, yeah. Thanks for the call, Jim. Dan and Sean from Elmwood Park in for Amy J.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J is Sean from Elmwood Park.
I want to talk about Liz Cheney's stock portfolio after the bomb strike.
Yeah, okay. No. We'll get to all things Liz Cheney and Mitch McConnell and Mitt Romney and CPAC
also
related.
Also looks like Kurt with a wig, Liz Cheney.
First, a question. This is sort of in your wheelhouse. You know, now that we're having so many discussions about K through 12 education over the last year because of the pandemic and the shutdowns and people trying to get back in and people questioning whether or not I should try to break my kid back into that school or really take stock of what K through 12 education looks like, including at my kid's school, and think about an alternative. What about ending compulsory education?
Love it.
What do you think about the idea that you should be required to go to school until you're 18? You should be required to go to school through high school. Should we end it? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. This is from a piece by Tony Esselin, Professor Tony Esselin, who is one of the great intellects in the world that most people don't know. He's been in academia his entire life. You go to school, which is mostly dull, and which wastes countless hours just riding the buses. If you're smart, you go to college, which is, setting government aside, the most expensive and most egregious racket and swindle in the nation. When you graduate, you are very still likely to be ignorant of almost all literature, art, and music of your own heritage. You probably are not good with numbers. You will have picked up a few evil and self-destructive habits. You will have plastered on your brain the sociological and political jargon of the day, and you will be over the gables in debt. But you will have the diploma, the ticket, and without that ticket, who is going to hire you? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line.
You know, you were an egghead, and you didn't have a lot of choices socially, so you had to go to school. I, on the other hand, hated school. I absolutely hated it. And the only reason I was even inspired was because of a couple of uncles, my mother, and strangers. I'm sorry, I didn't do the bulk of my philosophical learning in school. I did it out of school. I think it would be a much better world. And this is coming from a guy, you know, I like to be proud of myself. And one of the things I'm proud of myself about, I sent my kids to great schools, and every morning, don't believe a word these idiots tell you. It's the greatest thing I ever did.
Well, I mean, life is for everyone. Learning is for everyone. School is not. Colleges, such as they are now, are certainly not. That's Tony Esselin's message. And I tell you what, I find it difficult to disagree with him. I mean, the riff that I just read from his piece at amgreatness.com, how do you disagree with that? Maybe you disagree with the response to it. But he, as he writes, this narrative of the progression from K through 12 to getting that diploma, which is your toll to the gatekeeper at the bridge to go across and get a job, he writes, this narrative is ready to be smashed. Some people say we should assist the poor by financing their college education. In our context, this is to reward the racketeers. How about this instead? Let us work to break the college employment nexus. Get rid of compulsory schooling, for there is no such thing as compulsory education. Give employers again the permission to hire whomever they please for whatever reasons they please. Let them know that they need no longer turn to colleges as a mind-boggling, wasteful credentialing service.
I went to school to pick up chicks and fool around with those adjunct professors, which, by the way, are easy like Sunday morning. I had a great time. I think I at least two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that also speaks to the quality of the professorate in some, certain places, particularly wherever it was you matriculated.
Columbia College, where all the smart people went.
Yes, that is its reputation. Sure. Mike in Melrose Park, Sean's hometown. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, you know what? I think we're seeing what happens when kids don't go to high school right now. They go out and jack people's cars.
That's called ghetto ride share. Let's get that straight.
Ghetto ride share. I've heard you say that before. My apologies. But I think the guy's kind of right on with college. Not everybody needs it. Maybe a two-year college with some training for the trades. And high school is important for that because you can't take a kid that can't add and subtract and try to make them a machinist. So
thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah, but in terms of the idea, like what happens if you don't have compulsory K through 12 education, then you have kids on the streets carjacking people? Well, that's not true. I mean, it's true in a limited sense, but is compulsory education, is that what is preventing a greater number than the very small fraction of teenagers who are engaged in that sort of violent crime? Of course it isn't. What's the why are teenagers who are engaged, a very small fraction of teenagers overall that are engaged in that sort of violent crime, why are they, do you think? You think it has to do with not being in school? Or does it have to do more with the family situation, more with the criminal justice system's operation, and more with the value that is being provided by their compulsory schooling, separate and distinct from education? Schooling and education in this context, and Esselin makes this distinction, not synonymous.
If you eliminate schools, do you have any idea the amount of kids that won't be on mind-altering drugs? You got to keep your eye on the big pharma picture here, Prof. We need school that feeds the kids into future drug addicts. Let's pay attention.
Yeah, I mean, you have this... you know, in a little bit of historical context is always useful. I mean, you know, there was a time, and it's not that long ago, where compulsory schooling was not the law. And that kids left school after grade school to do things like go into business And Esalen has been doing a fun job going back and looking at some of the examples for the purpose of providing explanation to what it used to be like with so many children. Protect them from exploitation, and this is, we have child labor laws, and we have this, and we have that. Are you protecting them from exploitation by forcing them into these totalitarian re-education centers for 16 years of their life? Is that what you're doing? Or for, what you know, whatever, not 12, 13 years of their life? Is that what you're doing? You're preventing them from exploitation. You're providing them with the path to success, or are you just feeding the racketeers who have this set up to be the gatekeepers at a handsome price for you to get a job in the so-called professional world? I mean, I think it's a great conversation to have, because we have real-world examples of doing it the way we've been doing it and doing it the way we used to do it. And you're telling me that kids today are better educated than, literally better educated in so many ways than kids in the late 19th century in this country? I challenge you on that topic, and so does Anthony Esalen. It's just, we don't know. This is all we've done for our entire lifetime, so we're a fish that doesn't realize we're in water.
When I go after the Keynesian scam we call an economy, when I make fun of Big Pharma, when I make fun of the military-industrial complex, what do you say? I'm Don Quixote. You want to go after a trillion-dollar gangster industry that produces nothing but payoffs to their friends, and you think you got a chance of getting rid of education? They never would give up the big earner. This is like gangsters giving up loan sharking, gambling, prostitution. You keep the big ones. That's what puts the food on the table.
Yeah, but in terms of, you know, I talked to Tony about this piece, Tony Esalen. So what would you recommend conservatives do? And I'm not saying everybody be on the same track, but there are multiple tracks to take. Do you go to an Ivy League school if you can get in, and you fight the fight there to try to expand the parameters of debate on the campus of Princeton or Yale? Do you just funnel into the few schools that are still interested in preserving Western civilization, like Grove City College or University of Dallas or Hillsdale? Do you try to erect more of those? Or do you focus on, you know, getting your alumni network from whatever totalitarian re-education camp you went to, whatever racketeer's paradise you went to stop funding the schools? Because ultimately, you've got to deprive them of resources. But he said, break the college employment nexus. The idea that the colleges are the credentialing service at exorbitant prices and putting kids into substantial debt in exchange for that credential, not a good ROI in many cases. Break that nexus. That's where you should focus. And I think there's a lot of merit to that. And I think, you know, here's the difference between the right and the left on so many things. What you just said, it's impossible because this is the way things are, and these are entrenched interests. The left takes positions that are supported by a very small fraction of the population and just pounds and pounds and pounds away until they get their way, even if it's still only supported by a relatively small fraction of the population. If it makes enough sense to advance an argument in a way that people can understand it and appreciate the alternatives to the way things are, then perhaps you could topple a Goliath the pre-K through post-secondary racket in so many senses.
It's the trillion-dollar Ponzi scheme. But you do realize that even my generation, you were inundated with propaganda. You have to go to college. I take so much pride in guys from my neighborhood in hiring guys like you who went to law school and paying and then laughing how you need the money. So the reality is you can still do it. But that window of that ideology of success without education, what is it, about 0.3% of us that still believe that? So it's a lot of propaganda you're fighting.
I think it's more and more so. I think it's more and more so. I think this period of reexamination of so many things because of the pandemic, there are silver linings, and this is one of them. And we should take advantage to prompt these conversations and some thinking on the topic. Holly in St. Louis, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, boys. Big smile on my face waking up with you two. Hey, I disagree with you, Dan, and that rarely happens. And here's my thought process. I had three children. When my daughter, my oldest daughter, was in eighth grade, she came home. She said, Mom, I figured out what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to be a, I want to teach math, but I want to do it in Spanish. I said, here's what you do. You go to college, you get your engineering degree, and then you volunteer at the center down the road on the weekends and help the bilingual kids in math. No way in hell I'm sending you to college to get a degree in education. So from the get-go, my kids were told, you're going to college, and you're going to, and it's a vocational school. So my oldest daughter went to the Naval Academy. She's in flight school. My son is graduating from the College of Illinois, or the University of Illinois College of Engineering. He's got a, he was offered a job, got to pick what one of six cities he wanted to live in. He's starting his new career in Charlotte in May when he graduates. My youngest is a three percenter. She is a conservative kid in a very famous, highly selective elite school on the West Coast that accepts less than 8% of their kids. She's fighting the fight every day for conservatives on this campus. She's getting a degree in math with math with an emphasis in statistics to go into data analysis. It's not college that's the problem. It is the parents who are paying for kids to get degrees in psychology, who get degrees in elementary ed, who get degrees in journalism. It's not the idea of college that's wrong. It's the idea of no parental control once they get there to make the right choices.
It's both, and you don't disagree with me, actually, because I'm not saying college is for no one. I'm saying it's not for everyone. Oh, no, nobody is saying abolish higher education. Tony Esselin,
well, you know,
certainly I am not. That's not what we're, that's not the conversation. The conversation is a rethinking of how it operates so you don't reward racketeers as much and you return something resembling the classical liberal arts education in addition to, you know, gaining expertise in particular disciplines for some people, but that is, that can be a value add for example your children, but it shouldn't be a required credential like it is with this employment college nexus that Tony Esselin is discussing.
Don't hang up on me yet there, please, because that's a great distinction. I'm glad you made that, but the whole thing falls apart when community colleges come on the scene, because the racket they sell you in high school is, go do your gen eds out of the way at the community college, and then you'll just transfer right over and you'll graduate in 4 years from 4 years college. That happens in about 1% of the time. So these kids get out of high school, they waste time, they waste money at the community college level. They hate it, and they never go on to a 4-year school. So then they're in debt from wasting time at a community college, and they're more, even more behind the eight ball. So yes, we don't disagree, Dan. We never have, actually.
All right, thanks, Holly.
But I thought we agreed that math is racist. So therefore, Holly's daughter is clearly at least a bigot. I think the prime numbers are white, and the even numbers are in the Klan. Right? Wasn't that the rule?
Eugene in Des Plaines.
Yeah. Why don't you just, I agree with what you're saying, Dan, as far as eliminating the whole college financial crap. So homeschool the kids, and then at 18, give them mandatory 2 years military service.
Thanks for the call, Gene. I don't want to replace one compulsory system with another. I'm all for, you know, the people volunteering to be in the military, but I don't support compulsory.
You want your kids ruled by this 80-year-old dimwit who doesn't know if his diaper's wet or if he should leave the room? You just bombed Syria, and you're being sold a bill of goods. You want your kids in the military? Not me, baby. I wouldn't let my kids go. I'd run them to Canada myself, just like Biden did when Vietnam was there. Five deferments.
John on the Northwest side.
Hi, gentlemen. I'm a CPS teacher, and I agree with you. We definitely don't need a decent amount of students at the schools, and they should definitely have the option. Let me tell you what happens. The amount of resources that we spend go to probably the bottom half of the students, and by that I mean just like the intelligence test scores. I mean, there's not anything that I look at anymore at this point that I'm just not absolutely disgusted with my job. The educating of educators is just huge racket. I can't stand it. I'm disgusted with the union. And I'm not the only one. I'm sure you've had callers mention that, but yeah, the bottom line is that a lot of students don't need to be there. They don't want to be there. And we're really figuring that out with remote learning because they're just completely absent. They're not there. And I'm sure they're happy. I'm sure their families are happy because we're not breathing down their neck. They're not getting phone calls every day. And it's better for the students that want to actually be there.
Thanks for the call, John. Really interesting. There was a piece in the Amazon Post about this, actually, the missing students in the school district by in the thousands. We'll have to get to that later, but I do appreciate the perspective of a CPS teacher. Always do. Dan and in for Amy this morning, Sean from Elmwood Park. We'll be back.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and in for Amy J. This morning, Sean from Elmwood Park and our friend Brett Baer over at Fox News, hosts a special report, had a really solid interview with Mitch McConnell, Senate Minority Leader, and some good exchanges on important topics, including on the $1.9 trillion of funny money spending that the Biden administration wants to do in response to COVID. And by Biden's challenge to those who would oppose $1.9 trillion, I mean, just this is great.
Critics say the plan is too big, that it costs too much. But let me ask a rhetorical question. What would you have me cut? What would you have me cut out?
The reason it's rhetorical is because there are so many answers. He doesn't want them. That's why he's just, please don't answer. But Mitch McConnell did when Brett Baer put it to him.
That's a good question. First of all, the minimum wage doesn't belong in there. The Congressional Budget Office says it would cost 1.4 million jobs we'd lose. Second, $350 billion for bailouts to poorly run states. Clearly not necessary. With regard to the school funding that they added, by the way, the school funding that we've already provided is not yet spent out in a bill we passed just a couple of months ago. But of the school funding that they add, only 5% of it is used this year. The rest of it is spent out in future years. I thought this was supposed to be a package about COVID relief. This is wildly more expensive, Brett, than the country needs at this particular time because the vaccines are rolling out, shots are getting into arms, the economy is getting better and better.
And, I mean, we could go through each of the 600 pages and pick out so many more to add to what McConnell referenced. It's little things that are indicative of big things and a big scam. $1 billion for racial justice for farmers, $50 million for environmental justice grants, $112 million for California Bay Area rapid transit expansion, $10 million for Native American language preservation.
Well, that's got to stay.
I'm sure these are urgent spending needs to respond directly to the pandemic, are they? I mean, come on. And the other the other exchanges that was important in advance of CPAC and President Trump's speech there on Sunday was this idea that, boy, if Trump ran in 24, he'd be the odds-on favorite. And if he were the nominee, would you support him, Mitch?
If the president was the party's nominee, would you support him?
The nominee of the party? Absolutely.
Absolutely. Brett Baer, host of Fox News, hosts a special report and author of many bestsellers, including the most recent on FDR and his daring gamble to save us World War II. Brett, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning.
Good morning. You tried to foment discord there with the McConnell and Trump playing some of what Trump said about McConnell after what McConnell had to say about Trump on the Senate floor, but he wasn't biting. No civil war in the GOP, according to Mitch.
Yeah. Listen, I wasn't trying to foment discord. I was just trying to days after he gave that speech on the Senate floor, 12 days, and the response by the former president with that scathing long statement, and I put a piece of it up, but it got very personal in the statement. And obviously Trump supporters coming after Mitch McConnell saying, you know, what are you doing with that speech? And I just think it's interesting. He tried to not talk about Donald Trump at all, saying we need to move forward, et cetera, et cetera. But others are talking about Donald Trump. And I played the soundbite of Mitt Romney saying, you know, if he runs, he will win the primary hands down. And McConnell tried to say that, listen, it's really early and there's four senators who are considering running. But if push came to shove and he was the nominee, he would support him. And I just think that's interesting considering what happened 12 days ago.
So, Brett, I have this new 4K TV, and I am a big fan of your show, or as I call it, Brett Bear with the hair. And when you're on this 4K TV and you're interviewing old lady face Mitch McConnell and you're talking about low flow Joe Biden and these neo-Marxists and the rise of the Fourth Reich, I just keep thinking one thing. The next time you're in Illinois, can we play cards and can you bring your checkbook? Because I want some of that Fox money. What do you say? Are you in?
Sure. I'll play. You got it.
With respect to McConnell, you know, it seems to me that he is recognizing something that apparently some House Republicans don't recognize, like Liz Cheney. Even Mitt Romney recognizes it, which is picking public fights with Donald Trump is not advancing the flag to winning back majorities come November of 2022.
Exactly. And you know, this is the big problem for the GOP. They have to figure out a way to, if not embrace Trump, which many don't want to do in the party, embrace the policies and don't piss off the Trump supporters. I mean, that's literally the equation ahead of 2024. 22, it's important to rally those Trump supporters. I think this weekend is going to be fascinating for the future of the party, and what the former president says is going to really make a difference to how things line up.
Well, on that score, what are you hearing in terms of maybe some of the broad outlines of what he is going to tackle and maybe how he's going to tackle it?
Well, his former advisor, Jason Miller, says that it's going to be forward-looking and what the GOP needs to be. But, I mean, listen, let's be honest. It's going to be a Donald Trump speech that could cover the gamut. And I think it's going to be CPAC-esque, which will fire up the crowd and go a lot of different places. I think, you know, we forget the lack of Trump voice in our public after every day being, you know, a part of that. He's been relatively silent and not on Twitter, and it'll be watched by a lot of people.
You've been doing this for a very long time now. I mean, it's you were like a 16 handicap when you started the show. So in all of this time, and you see the mistakes being doubled down, the spending bills we speak of, the wag the tail bombing of Syria now. Do you think we're going to have to wait much longer before reporters start focusing on the waste, fraud, and abuse in the low-flow Joe Biden administration and kind of put the Trump on the back burner stuff? Because I really want to focus on what a failure he is already with a month in. Oil plus $60, the Dow Jones taking a shellacking, and the absolute failed policies on the horizon.
Well, I think there's going to be a lot more pointed questions because there's a lot of policies that you know, don't line up. And whether it's, you know, the pitch of being bipartisan, and we don't see any indication of that happening yet on Capitol Hill, or foreign policy that, you know, there are real questions about. And this, you know, bombing and Syria last night, Jen Psaki and former Vice President, now President Biden, tweeted out about actions by the Trump administration and airstrikes in Syria, being very critical about, you know, not knowing where it was going to go. I think that there are questions about this bombing too, about Iranian-backed militias and what that leads to. But I, you know, we're going to be stepping up, obviously, and you know, covering this administration tough but fair. And I think hopefully others follow suit.
Yeah, just on the matter of the bombing in Syria, Jen Psaki's tweet from April of 17. Also, what is the legal authority for strikes? Assad is a brutal dictator, but Syria is a sovereign country. And Joe Biden tweeting on the same topic in June of 2019. Trump's erratic, impulsive actions are the last thing we need as a commander-in-chief. No president should order a military strike without fully understanding the consequences. We don't need another war in the Middle East, but Trump's actions toward Iran only make that more likely. What about Joe Biden's actions toward Iran so far and the desire to resuscitate the nuclear deal? But they want an addendum, and guess what? The Iranians don't. They just want their $5 billion in IMF loans unfrozen.
Yeah, I fear, and this is one of the questions that you have to ask, is what is this strike really about? Is this strike to provide cover for whatever deal they're getting ready to do with Iran again? You know, look tough, striking Iranian-backed militias in Syria, but strike another deal with Iran, and something that John Kerry was working with Iranians behind the scenes of the Trump administration, if you believe all the reports, saying, you know, wait out Trump. I think there are tons of questions on Iran policy and what that means geopolitically. I mean, this report about the Saudis are coming out about MBS being tied to the death of Jamal Khashoggi, and it'll be out publicly. You know, it's a different track, completely different than the Trump administration took as far as using the Gulf allies to change the dynamic in the Middle East.
Going back to the conversation you had with McConnell, we played a portion of at the top. If Biden is unable to get $1.9 trillion through the Senate, where, if anywhere, does this go? Could this be the first big failure of Joe Biden to do what he wants to do, this massive COVID spending package?
Possibly. I mean, I think they'll jam this one through. I really do. Now that the parliamentarian has said that minimum wage is out, they'll probably take it out and make some kind of deal. And there are some Republicans saying they're willing to deal on the number on minimum wage. And they'll jam it through on party line with 51 under reconciliation. The question I asked McConnell was, does he think that Democrats are going to use reconciliation for other bills? And he says at least one more. And, you know, that again, is the question about bipartisanship and reaching across the aisle to get big things done. We haven't seen that yet.
Before we let you go, you know, just because you guys are there in New York, too, and with your contacts, how much trouble is Andrew Cuomo in terms of the prospect of impeachment? Yes, you've gotten criticism from some Democrats, including de Blasio, which is there's always been an antagonism between the two. But, I mean, is he in real trouble? What's the threat assessment there?
Yeah, I do think that there is action that he's going to face, and I think he is in real trouble. And it seems like these things are mounting. The investigation into the hospital and to the nursing home deaths is real and expanding, and there's a federal element to it. And obviously all that he said in the past about believing accusers adds to the coverage, which has crossed over to mainstream media. Not a ton, but some of the allegations of harassment.
Yeah, a lot of the other networks, they're doing their damnedest to try not to cover it, but you know, their hand is being forced a little bit. He is Brett Baer. He's the Fox News anchor, special report, 5 p.m. weekdays, Chicago time. Number one best-selling author of 3 Days at the Brink, FDR's Daring Gamble to Win World War II. Brett, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
And he joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Sean from Elmwood Park in for Amy J. And it's time for another great moment in Zoom education, a Dateline Montgomery County, Maryland, and a particular teacher's aid brought to us by the Fox affiliate out Maryland way.
Mark Shack, he is the man we're talking about here. He gave Fox 5 an on-camera interview today, admitting that it was him in the sexual act and that this was him, the one placed on administrative leave Monday. The recording shows the virtual session identify Mark Schack as the host. It then shows a man get up, turn to the side, and start fondling himself. We're only showing screen grabs because of how graphic the video is. Schack told us today he works as a teacher's aide and that this was a virtual history class involving two or three students. He says he's been at Shady Grove for about 3 years. He's listed as a special ed paraeducator on the school's website. The principal of the school sent a note to the families yesterday informing them of this incident. A school spokesperson also warned students could face disciplinary action if caught posting or sharing the video.
Oh, it's going to be on the eighth graders. Eighth graders not supposed to share this guy tubining himself during at the end of a Zoom history class. And by the way, tubining is now a verb. He actually gave an interview to this Fox affiliate. Remarkable. Listen to his explanation.
I don't know what to say. It was not directed towards the kids. I had no clue that I was online.
Good news.
Like a deviant. And I wouldn't do something to jeopardize my career. Like, I mean, that's silly. I've been, you know, for 20 plus years. I never did anything. Like, it was just dumb luck that I happened to be on when it happened. I'm sorry if I offended or did anything. I didn't do
it
intentionally.
I'm sorry if I offended.
No, you're okay. Don't worry about it. The good news is your union will protect you. But a little message to the Democrats out there. Can you just keep your hands off it during the interview? Just put it down during the interview. Go right back. We all know that's how you spend the bulk of your time. Do it off camera. Can you maybe just help us out?
It's not like I'm a deviant or anything. Things a deviant says.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. This morning, Sean from Elmwood Park. Anatomy of a Purge. Dan Henninger wrote in the Journal shortly after the rioting and the desecration at the Capitol about the response from the left, what the real aim here is and was, including with impeachment 2.0. It wasn't just to impeach and convict Donald Trump, bar him from running for office. It was to eliminate conservatives from the political arena. Eliminate conservatism. That is the play. How does it play itself out? Henninger's foreshadowing of what was to come post-impeachment 2.0, starting to. Two House Democrats from California, Representatives Anna Ishu and Jerry McInerney, sending a letter to the CEOs of comm companies demanding to know what they're going to do to police unwelcome speech. In other words, what they're going to do to deplatform anything that they decree a conservative news outlet. And of course, now layer in here, anatomy of the purge, layer in the experts, layer in the calls for safety and truth. The expert, in this case, the predicate for the letter, a Harvard academic, a Harvard law professor named Yochai Benkler, who is a loyal Elizabeth Warren donor, who cooked up this research to provide the basis for the letter to advance the purge. The research, listen to this, essentially its summary from the good professor. Our analysis underscores not only the enormous power of right-wing media, but also their distinctiveness from left-wing media. The conservative network of outlets, with Fox at its center, feeds a large minority of Americans narratives that confirm their biases, fills them with outrage at their political opponents, and isolates them from views that contradict these narratives. It is a closed propaganda feedback loop. Left-leaning media, whatever the goals of some of their members, have failed to produce anything similar, our analysis found. Oh, did it, Professor? So, one, you have to accept the premise that the dominant force in the media landscape is conservative. And two, that it is only conservative media outlets that come to the table with a particular worldview that are doing narrative telling rather than news reporting, create an echo chamber. No echo chamber at CNN, no echo chamber at MSNBC, the New York Times, the Amazon Post, and so on and so forth. But this is the predicate to the purge, and the Wall Street Journal opined on this. Imagine if a pair of Donald Trump's allies in Congress had sent a letter to cable company CEOs in 2017, blasting CNN and other progressive media outlets and asking why their content is still broadcast. Imagine a GOP-run committee in Congress staged a hearing on the societal menace of fake news and the need for government and business to rein in the hostile press, hostile to the Trump administration, because that's exactly what's now gone on from the Biden administration and his allies in Congress. It's really remarkable stuff.
What was the guy's name? Could you say it again? The professor?
Yochai Benkler.
Yeah, let's stop taking advice from guys named Yochai. Okay, how about we just start there?
Okay, for more on this topic, what is being purged in terms of outlets, but what is being purged in terms of content on outlets that are not conservative-oriented, of course. Of course, that's happening. The elimination of history, which is something new, as we discussed a little bit yesterday with Lance Morrow. Pleased to be joined by Maxim Lott. He's executive producer at Stossel TV, creator of electionbettingodds.com. Maxim, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Your reaction to what we are seeing transpire, you know, and the dots that are connecting with respect to how the left is going about trying to eliminate dissent.
Yeah, so you mentioned also the changing of history, and I dug into what's happening on Wikipedia, and I noticed that the socialism and communism articles have no mention anymore of the mass killings in communist regimes. They don't mention the Soviet Union, Mao's China, Castro's Cuba, Venezuela. None of that's on the socialism or communism pages. And these are big pages, 28,000 words, and they don't mention it. They mention lots of other history. They mentioned that some of the great technological advances in the 20th century were done in the Soviet Union. They don't mention the mass famines, the mass political purges that killed millions. So there does seem to be a kind of rewriting of history there. And also to the point of what you were just saying, Wikipedia has downgraded lots of websites that they consider right-wing, like the New York Post. They, ever since they broke the correct Hunter Biden scandal, they've been considered unreliable on Wikipedia. You can't use them as a source.
So, Maxim, let's not get caught up on little details like, you know, mass murder and whatnot. Before the government went into gambling and drug dealing, neighborhoods like the one I grew up in were very involved in it. So I like it when bookies are wrong. However, in this election cycle, when you see what happened to the gaming, the election gaming sites from 1 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock in the morning, and you look at the improbability of a low-flow Joe victory, do you think that there will be some future outcry for elections to stop being frauded and stolen, or will the bookies just keep taking it on the chin?
That's a good question. You know, the betting odds follow kind of whatever is happening. So one person is taking it on the chin, but the other bettors are making money. So I would say the bettors are just going to factor in that there will be fraud if there is fraud. So expect to see Democratic odds higher in the next round if they think that'll happen.
Well, just on that topic, there's a good piece at American Greatness by Michael Anton, Publius Ducius Mus, if you remember, Flight 93 election author, and then he went to work as a speechwriter for President Trump for Time. Why do defenders of the 2020 election require his agreement, as he asked the question? Why must I agree with their characterization of what happened in 2020? Why am I not allowed to ask any questions? Why are they so adamant in terms of, again, eliminating dissent and demanding agreement? And he suggests that the purpose of voting today is to give a democratic veneer, small d, to an undemocratic regime, not to give the people a say in the direction of their government. And that veneer also requires the elimination of dissent in these other areas. And so I wonder, I mean, you know, John Stossel's done great investigative work for decades and decades now, but I wonder how concerned you are and how concerned we should be over at Salem Media and AM560 about the coming purge of other platforms, too, because, you know, this sort of conversation we're having is dangerous, according to Democrat members of Congress.
Yeah, I would say I have not myself, you know, investigated the fraud to have any level of confidence on it. But I will. People clearly should be able to speculate about it and publicly make statements. You know, Stacey Abrams, just for example, I believe is still saying the election was stolen from her in Georgia 2 years ago, and she has a book that Amazon promotes about saving democracy. While she says that, so it, you know, contesting an election is not anti-democratic. So people should be allowed to speak.
And you know, I mean, just your affiliation with John Stossel and Stossel TV, your perspective on you know what you and your colleagues are seeing as this plays itself out.
Yeah. Well, again, the election. I'm not convinced the election.
I'm not talking about the election. I'm talking about the purge. I'm talking about the elimination of dissent.
Right. So the that seems to be a big problem, in my opinion. You have. You know, lots of people getting kicked off social media. It seems like Parler is back up, and that's good news that there is competition again in that sphere. But people need to be allowed to speak. We need to somehow get back to a culture of tolerance in this country. Right wingers should be able to speak. Left wingers, everyone. There is some positive stuff on that. You see some left wing intellectuals like Glenn Greenwald or Matt Iglesias saying, you know, let's let people speak. We do need free speech. So hopefully that wing will eventually win out on the left.
Yeah,
so we shall see.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you were talking about what Wikipedia is eliminating. How about what school systems are eliminating? San Francisco school board that would move to rename all these schools is going through a purge of names. It doesn't even matter if their assessment of the namesake of a particular school is correct. For example, Ed Morrissey, our colleague over at hotair.com, reported this week, they put the a school named Lowell School on the purge list. They're going to rename it because James Russell Lowell, one of the Fireside Poets, who's, by the way, a worthy designee as a namesake, had some conflicted views of the abolition of slavery. Well, it turns out that school was not named after the poet Lowell. It was named after Lowell, Massachusetts, because of a prominent person from Lowell, Massachusetts in the community back when, back at the turn of the century. The response to the school board was, we're going to rename it anyway. It doesn't matter. Even the underlying truth of their criticism doesn't matter in terms of the manufacture of of history from day one in real time. So yes, the elimination of understanding for younger people of the ravages of socialism and communism in the Soviet bloc and elsewhere, including in real time in places like Venezuela. But also the underlying criticism doesn't even need to be true. Oh yeah, okay. Well, it turns out we're wrong, but we're going to go ahead anyway. I mean that is that is a new place for America.
Yeah. One thing to note, you know, the San Francisco School Board, one of the renamings they did, which was a mistake, they got that from Wikipedia, actually, it turned out. So it's all kind of intertwined and feeds on itself. A lot of these left-wing journalism outlets also cite Wikipedia. If they don't know anything about some particular group, the first thing they do is type it into Wikipedia, and you can often tell that reading the article. So it's all intertwined. And the bias on Wikipedia, I think, is worth people knowing about, because it's gotten a lot worse in the last couple of years. So it's worth people knowing that if you're on Wikipedia, just take it, A, with a grain of salt, and B, if it's on anything political, know that they might have just left out half of the argument or half of the history.
Maxim, I have a question for you. I'm a big fan of Stossel TV. I love John Stossel. I have the alert on my phone. And I just want to know, for future viewing, do you have a policy against fondling yourself, or have you accepted the teachers' union of it's yours and you can play with it? What exactly is the policy at Stossel TV?
You know, I don't know what the teachers' union policy is there, but we covered the teachers' unions a lot. And they've got some interesting stuff going on where they you know, it's kind of a...
Yeah, I can understand why you're struggling to pivot yourself out of that nonsense. He's referencing some guy that got caught pleasuring himself from Montgomery, yeah, Maryland on a Zoom history class. You probably saw, but anyway.
Yeah, we have covered that, and you know, mm-hmm, right now they're giving in Fairfax, teachers at the front of the line for vaccine, and they're saying we still can't go back to work. It's not safe enough. So they got vaccinated, and they still don't want to work. So, and they protect teachers who, yeah, there was also a story we covered where the teacher was, he was so obese that he was urinating in class and having students take the bottle out to the bathroom.
Oh my goodness.
Which is, you know, just horrible. And they couldn't fire him because of the union rules.
Of course not. Of course not. Put him on administrative leave while they review whether or not that's consistent with the school policy. No. Yeah. Maxim Lott, executive producer at Stossel TV, creator of electionbettingodds.com as well. Maxim, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Great. Good Join talking us on the, to you guys.
A pleasure to have you. And he joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. This morning is Sean from Elmwood Park. And as we spoke about last hour with Brett Baer, the D.C. press corps and the ruling class is doing their best to not have to account for their lionization of Nipples Ring Gambino over the last year, the sanctification of one Andrew Cuomo. They're doing their best. They're doing their best not to pay attention to the infighting that's going on in Democrat socialist circles in New York State. But thanks to Steve Ducey over at Fox News, the Biden administration had to weigh in through its spokesbeing, Jen Psaki. And that means you can't ignore her response. Note the shifting standard of analysis when it comes to sexual harassment / assault allegations against one Nipples Ring Gambino as compared to, say, a Brett Kavanaugh, Jen Psaki.
The president has been consistent in his position. When a person comes forward, they deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. Their voice should be heard, not silenced, and any allegation should be reviewed. Governor Cuomo is also the governor of one of the largest states in the country that has been one of the hardest hit, with millions of people still suffering from an ongoing pandemic and an economic crisis. And our focus is to continue working with governors from across the country, from a range of states, on how we're helping people in their states.
She sped past that nicely. You may not have caught the new standard. Let's try again with Kristen Gillibrand, the vacuous cheerleader / New York U.S. senator.
These allegations are serious and deeply concerning, and anyone has a right to come forward to be heard and to have allegations be investigated. Governor Cuomo also has a right to be heard, and he has come forward and has denied these allegations. But ultimately, the decision will be up to the state legislature.
Uh-huh. Did you catch it? See, when it's Cuomo or Spitzer or Wiener, it's the right to be heard. That's what the woman has, the right to be heard. When it was Kavanaugh, you'll recall it was the right to be believed. Sans any commentary from Brett Kavanaugh. Just so you understand the consistency or lack thereof of all these Me Too heroines like Kristen Gillibrand. For more on the topic, we're pleased to be joined by David Marcus. He is a Federalist.com columnist as well as a contributor to the New York Post, and he's joining us from CPAC in Orlando. David, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
So what about that standard? Do I have that right? Did I notice a bit of a dial turn there when it comes to the good governor?
I do think you have it right, although I'm going to quibble with your mafia analogy. The Gambino crime family was one of the most successful and, frankly, amazing crime families in New York. I would compare Governor Cuomo to the Lucchese crime family, which was kind of a a bumbling operation.
Well, wait a second. So I'm actually, it's not a Crime Family reference because I don't want to get tagged with like an Italian slur. It's actually a Childish Gambino reference. So it's a Donald Glover reference. And I'm throwing in the nipple rings thing. And I also wanted to get your local knowledge on the topic. This was a controversy a couple of months ago, and some people have suggested that it was never proven definitively that he is actually someone who sports nipple rings. It looks like he did, and I wonder if you know the truth.
Nobody knows anything about Andrew Cuomo. Look, the point that I keep making about Andrew Cuomo, I had the opportunity to have a nice long conversation with a great Chicago columnist John Cass about this, is Cuomo still operates as if he's the head of a big Democratic Party machine. Right? You guys know about this in Chicago, right? You had Rahm Emanuel, who would be naked in the gym, walking up to people, sticking his finger in someone's chest and saying,
"That wasn't his
you
finger.
Go along." They'd say, you go along or I'm going to destroy you, which is exactly what Andrew Cuomo said to State Representative Ron Kim in New York. But we're in a post-machine age. That worked 15 years ago. It doesn't work anymore, right? Kim can go to Twitter. Kim can go to the networks and defy the head of the Democratic Party machine. And Cuomo's discovering this. Look, it's a problem, man. We've known for months that he's been lying about the numbers in the nursing homes. Finally, the very progressive Attorney General of New York, Letitia James, came out with a report and said, "You're lying. There's 10,000 people dead who you didn't report." That's a Democrat. AOC is calling for an investigation. I mean, this guy's in trouble, man. It's big trouble. And the media can try to cover for him. His brother can try to cover for him on CNN. It's not going to work.
The reality, this is Sean Thompson. The reality is the Democrat Party is the party of the mafia. I mean, we say it in jest, but that is the actual fact of what the Democrat Party is. And when you see this kind of dual standard, it kind of reminds you of the people running cover for him are the exact ones that would be crowing like a rooster under any other circumstances, but they leave off the word. The people can be heard, but they also are ignored. And this is something that I am amazed at, the complacency of the people who are still willing to call themselves Democrats. Now, we know that they're primarily in on the scam, but are there still that many people too stupid to see the scam?
I don't know. I mean, you know, there may be or there may not be, but, you know, I think what we can take some hope from is the fact that Republicans are bucking against people like Liz Cheney, who are useful idiots saying, "Oh, we have to, you know, we have to take care of the white supremacy issue in the Republican Party." What? Right. We have a Democratic Party that basically insists that we judge everybody by their skin color. That's the line of the Democratic Party. And we have a Republican Party now, you know, driven by Trump, you know, but driven more by this sort of like older populist message that really came from guys like Pat Buchanan. Right. This is older than Trump. It says no. We're not going to do that. We're not going to judge people by their skin color. We're going to judge people by their merit. We're going to judge people by the content of their character, right? That used to be the measure, and it still should be. And there are millions of Americans, tens of millions of Americans, and not just white Americans, but Hispanic and Black and Asian blue-collar workers and people all across this country who aren't taking it anymore. And my goodness, it's a blessed thing.
You had an excellent piece on Liz Cheney and this statement that she made that you just referenced, where she's essentially adopting the caricature of the Republican Party by the left, and that she essentially knows what she's doing. And this was interesting because I agree with you. in the context of something else Mitt Romney said in an interview with Andrew Ross Sorkin about how he represents a tiny wing of the Republican Party. And he may have been trying to be self-effacing or may not, but regardless, he's accurate. And I think one of the things that's happened from the Trump presidency forward is a lot more people have gotten wise to the Mitt Romneys and the Liz Cheneys of the world. They see them for who they actually are, which is not Republican Party leaders, not conservative leaders. Their voting record is irrelevant in the conversation, frankly. They are status seekers, and so they will do and say what they need in the direction of status. And most of them of this ilk are happy to sell out their constituents or their stated values in order to have lunch with Klaus Schwab in Davos.
What Liz Cheney did was not only unconscionable, it's unforgivable, because her colleagues are going to pay the price for this, right? This is why Chip Roy, Representative Chip Roy, who defended Cheney for her absurd vote to impeach Trump. And by the way, look at Tuesday's testimony before the Senate hearing on what happened at the Capitol. But what did we learn? We learned that nobody anticipated this kind of attack, right? We learned that there was one piece of intelligence that maybe didn't get run up the line. But like what we heard from every person there was, we thought this was going to look like the MAGA rallies from November and December. Nobody anticipated it, right? If Donald Trump could not have anticipated the attack on the Capitol, how could he possibly have incited it, right? So we know that now. And what Liz Cheney is doing by throwing Republican voters under the bus and her own colleagues, right? Listen, man, like every Democrat who runs against a Republican member of Congress is going to have an ad that has Liz Cheney yes. saying, Republicans are the party of white supremacy. It's unforgivable. It's unforgivable.
I 100% agree. I think that's spot on. And just on the matter of January 6th and owning the truth of what happened on that day, which I hope President Trump addresses, I expect he will in some material way on Sunday when he speaks at CPAC. But I wanted to play this too, because I agree with you that the testimony this week essentially exonerates Trump, as do the statements from people who voted to convict him, like Amy Klobuchar, that this was a coordinated attack. Well, if it's coordinated, by definition, he didn't incite it, because it was, unless you want to charge him as a conspirator, which nobody says he is. They said he incited. That was the charge. So they can't have it both ways. And it's interesting, because one of the pieces of evidence they try to use is the people who've been arrested for violence on that day. They're saying, I thought Trump wanted me to do this. And a federal judge has addressed that evidence. And so has one of the Young Turks in addressing what the federal judge had to say. Listen to what Anna Gasparian from the Young Turks, which is like the biggest leftist show online, what she has to say in her conclusions as someone who wanted to see Trump impeached and convicted.
Well, we know that one particular federal judge is not buying it. At a bail hearing for Proud Boy member William Crestman from Kansas, who is accused of storming the Capitol, Chief U.S. District Court Judge Beryl Howell said she was dubious about the legal merit of the effort to shift blame toward the former president and his inflammatory rhetoric about the election. So here's what she said during this case. This purported defense, if recognized, would undermine the rule of law. Then, just like a king or a dictator, the president could dictate what would be legal and what isn't in this country. And that is not how we operate. So she also, you know, gave some examples of how, you know, this wouldn't apply in some of the extreme cases, right? So if President Trump ordered or instructed a member of the Proud Boys to go off and murder somebody, and someone went off and did that, it follows that would immunize them from liability for that criminal act. In effect, isn't that what your legal argument is saying? And of course, this was a question that was posed to the lawyers representing William Crestman. And so she's not buying it. I think that it's right to not buy it.
She's not buying. It's not right to not buy it. So what we know from impeachment 2.0 is the same thing we learned from impeachment 1.0. Not only is there no underlying evidence to support the charge, the actual evidence points in the opposite direction.
Look, I know you're interviewing me, and it's untoward for me to ask you a question, but let me ask you this question, even if it is untoward. Did Donald Trump take to Twitter to urge people to bail out the Capitol rioters?
Right. Right. You mean like Kamala Harris? I mean,
he might have been reelected like Kamala if he
Harris
did that.
Did, right? Right? I mean, you know, Kamala Harris, when people in Minneapolis were burning down businesses, and in fact we know that somebody was burned alive and killed in one of those buildings, she took to Twitter and said, hey, here's the Minneapolis bail fund. Let's bail these guys out. Did Donald Trump do that? I don't think he did. Now, listen, I don't think Trump handled that day particularly well, but I remember that day really well, right? We had at the Federalist two people on the ground. And as this was happening, I was getting reports from the people on the ground. We didn't know what was going on. Clearly the Capitol Police didn't know what was going on. I don't know that the White House knew exactly. I don't know that anybody knew exactly what was going on. This was a mess. And I'm not defending the mess that happened, and I'm not defending Trump's reaction to it. But my goodness, there's a double standard here as far as how we look at these situations. And why is Washington, D.C. a war zone right now? Why are there tens of thousands of troops? You know, why is this like 1864? In Washington, D.C. I don't know the answer to that.
He is David Marcus. Catch his work at the Federalist, Federalist.com, as well as NewYorkPost.com. And David, we'll look forward to your reviews on everything that transpires at CPAC this weekend as well. Thanks for joining us, as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Have a great one.
You too. You joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
Grab a line, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. It's Open Mic Friday, taking your calls. Any topic, comments, criticisms, concerns, crack pottery, conspiracy theories. And since you are a guest, Sean from Omen Park sitting in for Amy J, we'll let you begin with your customary asshattery.
It's hard to pick just one, you know, but I do have the fill-in for Steve Cortez show, so I don't have to give you everything. But I will say right now, I want to find out the congressmen, the senators, and all their little helpers, also known as relatives, they can't get normal jobs. I want to see their stock option play 6 hours before the so-called strike on Iran and Syria. I want to see how many of these scumbags made a fortune in that bombing as the Dow is getting pummeled for 2 days.
Did you want to offer, I'll give you a chance as well, to eulogize Gambino crime family boss Peter Gotti, dead at the age of 81. Did you have any comments then?
Listen, that's a successful example of a Democrat. I you know, my heart goes out to the Gotti family. They're wonderful, and they are, after all, the earners of the Democrat Party. So a little respect, huh, Prof?
This story, I took some interest, especially the reaction. Did you hear about the Lady Gaga's dogs being kidnapped? Two of her French bulldogs were kidnapped by a couple of guys that rolled up on her dog walker, shot him, actually, and stole her bulldogs. So that's terrible, obviously. But the response in Hollywood is so interesting. Hollywood dog walkers alarmed by the shooting of the man strolling with Gaga's French bulldogs, two of which were stolen, reportedly seeking to protect themselves and their four-legged charges. Now you've got Hollywood dog walkers talking about getting concealed carry permits and taking karate classes because of this incident. It's interesting, all of a sudden, when you feel a little bit vulnerable and your ideology is out the window and it's time for a little bit of self-protection. It's just interesting. And I hope her French bulldogs are found and safe, of course.
Do you have to shoot a dog walker? Are they normally tough people, dog walkers? I mean, I think you can just throw them on the ground and take the dog.
All right, take a few of your calls. Verlon on the south side kicks it off.
Well, since nobody called this month and made a contribution to Black History Month, I guess I will. So I did something for both of you so you wouldn't have to. I went to go see the movie Judas and the Messiah. So here's my critic's opinion. Uh-huh. It lacked depth. It lacked depth. I wanted to see more of a backstory on Fran Hampton, something like Malcolm X, so I could figure out why he started onto the path that he did. And the director romanticized socialism and communism, and they made him out to be a great uniter. So I got a question for you and the audience. Well, it's a three-part question. Was he hero or was he terrorist? Was he angel or was he devil? Was he the bringer of peace, or was he an existential threat? I would like to know from the two smartest men that I know, which one was he?
Thanks for the call, Verlon. So Verlon's talking about this movie, Judas and the Black Messiah, about Fred Hampton, Black Panther Party founder. Sorry for breaking up your Black Panther Party. Rather than weigh in on that topic, just since we're doing movie reviews, I do have one. I think I've mentioned on my other show, but I didn't mention on this show. The Dig. If you haven't seen The Dig, you want to see something beautiful. And actually, in this time of purging and trying to eliminate history and Western civilization and its history, The Dig with Ralph Fiennes and Carey Mulligan, based on a true story, archaeologist in the run-up to World War II across the pond in England is the backdrop, and it is just a beautiful movie that artfully conveys the importance of understanding where you come from, the importance of your heritage, everybody's heritage, the importance of the truth of human history. It's just a wonderful, wonderful movie if you're looking for something beautiful in these ugly times.
And it's better than Blackula? Are you sure? See, people don't know, Verlon is a regular at the Elmhurst Cigar House. And Verlon is the champion of picking terrible, terrible movies. In fact, if he says a movie to watch a movie, that's put on the never watch list. So I'm not going to go with Verlon. I'm going to stick with Foxy Brown, Shaft 1, 2, and 3, and Blackula. Those are my favorites.
Okay, very. That's your contribution to Black History Month. I'm sure Verlon appreciates that. Gary in Streamwood, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. I just was a crazy crackpot conspiracy. You know, with all these Democrats that supported all the riots in the cities and everything, how come we can't put the Democratic Party on the domestic terror list and just totally get rid of them?
All right. Thanks for the call, Gary. Rich in Indian Head Park.
Hey, good morning, Sean. Good morning, Dan. I have two quick things. The first thing is a question. Why do we have to respect the rights of the LGBTQ community when they don't respect the rights of all of the other people that don't agree with their views? That's the question I have for you two guys.
Well, I mean, and thanks for the call, Rich. I mean, when you say respect the rights, you mean it's not really respecting the rights. You're saying, why should we have to indulge their demands for special rights is what I hear you saying, because obviously everyone is entitled to equal protection under the law. Everyone is entitled to their God-given constitutional rights as enshrined in our founding documents. So there's no question about that. And so that's the whole point I think you're getting to. It's not a question of rights. It's a question of privileges they demand based on their stated real or imaginary identity. And that's the rub, isn't it?
Well, as he was addressing me, you talk about respect. I'm the king of respect.
Oh, yes.
And what you must do is give them the respect they deserve. And what I've learned is that when I see these fellas dressed as their mom, I say, come on, pal, stop kidding around. Get in the men's room, dummy.
Rick in Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning, Dan. I like when Sean is on because you got to strap in tight because you never know where it's going to go. But my comment is on the mask. You know how Dr. Fauci says, you know, two masks? I actually think it should be a thickness thing, not a number thing. And I think a minimum one-inch thick mask would take care of a lot of the problems out there with the mask heads. And one other thing is the you know how everything's like the, you know, the first black woman to have this and the first guy with a crew cut to have this position. President Biden, he's the first as well. He's the first illegitimate president. I don't know if anybody realizes that.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Mike in Plano.
Hey, guys, couple quick things. Sean, I don't know about you, but I think now would be a good time for Congress to pass a $2 trillion infrastructure bill. We got to get the Charles Schumer Bridge to Nowhere built here.
There's never a bad time for $2 trillion, brother. Haven't you been paying attention?
Yeah, ever since Trump pushed it a couple of years ago. But the main point I wanted to make is, Dan, I heard you talk to Catalina Lauf yesterday, and she's out in my district. She ran the 14th last year and lost her Republican primary. And I know she's trying to unseat Kinzinger, but the problem out here is when she ran, she had like five other Republicans run to try and take the nomination away from Oberweis, and they split the vote. And I'm afraid that's going to happen to her again, and Kinzinger might get the Republican nomination just from all these people trying to run, because even Jim Martyr wants to run again. I like Jim Martyr. He's a strong conservative, a nice guy. But how many times does this guy need to run before he realizes the local populace out here rejects him? He ran for Senate in 2016, lost. He ran for Congress in 2020 and lost. I just get sick of these guys that can't put their pride aside and just let Lauf have a shot at it. She is the stronger candidate. She can easily beat identitarian arguments from the left. She has visual appeal, and she has passion for conservatism.
All right, thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah, I put that question to her about it. Can she consolidate the sort of anti-Kinzinger support so you don't have a crowded primary? Obviously, you're not going to have like a Jim Oberweis and a Sue Rezin like you had in the 14th District, formidable candidates that were well-financed. Probably they're not going to run to be a spoiler for Kinzinger to do his dirty work. So I think she has a chance to consolidate that, it would seem to me. And I wouldn't necessarily assume that Kinzinger runs for re-election. You know, with setting up that super PAC, he may be looking for a lucrative way out of Congress, time to make money now that he's essentially ended his political career in terms of dreams of a statewide office or bigger. Stan and Aurora, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. So at the bottom of the hour, your guest on, you guys brought up the names, Gadflies, Romney, and Liz Cheney. And I keep thinking about all the other Republicans out there, Lisa Murkowski, various other ones that seem to be this new American noble class that feels they have the divine right to rule. To my fellow Republicans, stop voting for the children of these guys. They all grew up in the swamp. Stop voting for them. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Stan. Ron in Varna, Illinois.
Yeah. Those 10,000 troops in Washington, where are they sleeping and eating and all that stuff? I mean, you know.
The Ritz.
The Ritz, yeah. Who's paying for the Ritz?
You are.
Actually, hardly. We know from previous examples, like them sleeping in the Capitol Rotunda, that the National Guardsmen and women not treated terribly well by the political ruling class, were they?
No, they treat them like crap. We're not in a war zone in Washington like Nancy and the Democrats think. But I mean, they got to have some respect for the military. Those people are there sleeping in a cold parking garage. Come on, now, this is the United States. This ain't Russia or China.
Thanks, Ron. Eduardo at Midway.
Yeah, I'll be quick. The BBC should have been covering Anita Dunn's comment that COVID was the best thing to happen with President Biden.
All right. Thanks for the call, Eduardo. Anita Dunn, longtime Dem socialist operative. Charlotte in Arlington Heights.
Hi. I think Governor Pritzker should be recalled. He has basically thrown Illinois seniors under the bus. 4 million people, class 1B. An 80-year-old is competing with a 20-year-old teacher and a Home Depot worker and a supermarket clerk, daycare workers, to get vaccine. And it's not a matter of life and death with the younger people. And this is not being done in Indiana, Massachusetts, Wisconsin, Florida. They're starting with age first and moving down.
Yeah, right. Thanks for the call, Charlotte. By the way, I mean, I had this conversation yesterday with somebody. It's just remarkable how dense some Illinoisans are. And, you know, this is why you have the state you have and why Florida is the state it is, just to compare the two, because that's the argument we got into. Illinois' case fatalities on a per capita basis, COVID fatalities on a per capita basis, is 20% higher than Florida, and Illinois' unemployment rate is 30% higher than Florida. And I'm getting into an argument with somebody trying to defend the Illinois position, the worst governed state in America across any measure. He talks about COVID infection rate. You know, that this forever moving the goalposts, or essentially trying to imbue meaning into statistics that don't have much meaning. This is about adverse outcomes like hospitalization and death. It's not about elimination of the virus, which is an impossibility. It's just remarkable to me the willful blindness, the Stockholm syndrome, that which is the real virus in Illinois. It's not even a close call with respect to, for example, Florida and Illinois. Florida ridiculed, Illinois should be ridiculed. And frankly, more than just ridicule, there should be a reckoning for Governor Pritzker and Mayor Lightfoot on down for their management of COVID-19, like you're starting to see somewhat in California and New York. But again, as I lamented yesterday, you're not seeing very much evidence it's a possibility in Illinois, are you?
Not to mention, the voter is so corrupted. Pritzker is going to be the governor until type 2 diabetes comes off the sideline. He'll be there for as long as he wants. Democrats will vote for Beelzebub if they're told to. It is the party of the mafia. They're in on the scam.
Terry in Rogers Park.
Yeah, I like what that guy said earlier about not allowing his son to get a tattoo. I detest seeing tattoos on women so much that when I use the ladies' public restroom, I tape a note on the door that says, tattoos look ugly, especially on girls. And I do it, I hope it saves some of them from making that stupid mistake.
All right, thanks for the call, Terry.
Have you been to the Tilted Kilt lately? They're not all bad.
Well, my philosophy on tattoos, generally speaking, is Theodore Dalrymple's, which is a tattoo basically tells me you cannot defile yourself fast enough.
Well, and I also think they should not be put on anybody who cannot fit into my underwear.
That's a very unfortunate visual. Arlene in Wakanda, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, hi. I received a survey in the mail about stopping George Soros trying to stop Fox News, and I wondered, you know, how to respond to that. You know, it's a survey, and they want to take down Tucker Carlson and Hannity, of course. So I'm just wondering if I should contribute to this or
no. Well, I don't know.
Survey,
I don't know.
Or is it possible?
I don't know what the organization. Yeah, I don't know what the organization is, but.
It's called Senior Americans Association, yeah. And it's run by someone named
Adam Tinzinger.
Black?
No. Arlene, I'm not going to comment on whether or not you should donate to a particular organization. Thanks for the call. But I will tell you, I mean, we were talked about it in the 7 o'clock hour with Maxim Lott. The Democrats' assault on conservative media, the idea of purging conservative media and conservatives, office holders, media personalities, rank and file conservatives from the public square is very real, and it is afoot. So that is a real thing.
But you do realize that could also be a marketing ploy by some sophisticated scoundrel who ran as a Tea Party candidate and then became a scumbag like Adam Kinzinger. So my answer to you, I will give you an opinion. My offer to you is nothing, and you will pay for the gaming license. You give them the Michael Corleone. Stop giving money to these scoundrels who are liars.
Well, yeah, but you don't know anything about the organization either.
So. I'm going to start with no.
Yeah, okay. Deborah in Arlington Heights.
Good morning. I actually... I'm over 60, but under 65, and I am in the very last group to get a vaccine in the second phase behind prisoners. Now, tell me how much sense that makes, like if I'm supposed to be in a category where people are more at risk and I'm last behind everybody else.
You can look it up on the website in Illinois. I'm last.
Thanks for the call, Deborah. Well, this is what happens when, you know, politics and identitarian politics in particular, the idea of serving particular constituencies rather than going for the highest, best use of scarce resources occurs, which is, has occurred in Illinois and hasn't, again, occurred in Florida, just going back to the Illinois-Florida comparison with respect to efficacy of vaccine distribution.
Did you tell her about my friend in New York that got the vaccine? I don't think you should be in a hurry to get the vaccine.
I also wanted to let you know that I was in New York a few days ago, and I got the vaccine, but it was the, I guess, the lesser researched Chinese one. But they said that so far they haven't seen any side effects. But if I see any side effects, then I'll definitely let you know. But as of right now, there's nothing that I can see that is a side effect for the vaccine. So if you would like to get one, I can make you an appointment. No problem. Hope everything is okay with you, and have a good day. Okay, bye.
I'm not getting a vaccine.
I would like to apologize for that straight away, not just for the bad El D'Amato sort of impersonation, but also for the fact that Sean from Elmwood Park gets all of his kitschy memes that are 3 weeks old and thinks that he's really provided an insight for you. He's not exactly tip of the spear there, but okay, sure. Yeah, all right. David in Lansing.
Good morning, guys. I just heard in your news feed a couple hours ago that the Illinois Tollway Authority is trying to cut out cash payments forever, or they're going to. This confirms to me that those in power in Illinois are trying to commit financial suicide. It's as if there's 10 guys in a room, or I don't know, no, 10 people, that are trying to decide that, how can we get people to move out of the state? They're one-upping each other. Sean will like that. How can we get people to move out of the state, and how can we get less tourists? I know, cut out all cash payments, and they sit around and laugh and collect 5 pensions.
Thanks for the call, David. I mean, you know, again, if you were trying to commit financial suicide, you couldn't do a better job than the political class in this state, both parties, the bipartisan combine, has done over the last 50 years. Dan and Sean from Elmwood Park, in for Amy J.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.